Our second case for this afternoon is also O'Keefe against Schmitz. This one is, and also the unnamed interveners. I'll give you all a minute to reshuffle.
I've only been here 40 years.
You learn something new every day. All right, Mr. Boutros?
Yes, thank you, Chief Judge Wood. May it please the court, I am here representing the coalition of media organizations and transparency groups seeking to unseal the remaining portions of the sealed record before this court and in the district court. There really is no dispute in this case, finally something with no dispute, about what this court has held in terms of the public's right of access to judicial records and proceedings.
Certainly have never held that there's any presumption of disclosure of grand jury records, right? What we're looking at is a grand jury analog in which relief has been sought in federal court. Is it your position that any time somebody seeks some relief about a grand jury, all the grand jury records become unsealed?
No, it's not our position, Your Honor. And here...
But then why isn't that enough to place you on the other side of this very case?
For multiple reasons, Your Honor. First, there are some similarities between the John Doe proceedings and the grand jury.
Before you get there, let me ask you, as you answer, to discuss, in a sense, three different categories of documents. We have the eight documents that are under seal, four affidavits and four related documents, apparently. Then the special prosecutor, Mr. Schmitz, has suggested that there are a few more documents that he thinks ought to remain under seal. And then thirdly, the district court has created a procedure under which it wants to review kind of everything else. And I'm actually not comfortable that we have jurisdiction over anything but the eight documents that are specifically designated, because I have no idea what's going to come out of the procedure for everything else, right? For all I know, that's ongoing as we speak in the district court. So it would help me if you would be clear about exactly which documents you're concerned right now.
Absolutely. Why don't I start with the eight documents that the district court permanently sealed and which this court clearly has jurisdiction to review under Grove Fresh and its other access
decisions. And I had the same question Judge Easterbrook did. Unless Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 6 is really off base, you know, the normal rule is that investigatory documents of this sort, grand jury documents for that rule, are not open to the public. Now, I realize the John Doe procedure could be open to the public, but we are told in the briefs that de facto it really never is. And this one wasn't.
Let me start with that, Chief Judge Wood, because, first of all, there are analogies between the two proceedings, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court has held that the John Doe proceedings are presumptively open.
But didn't Judge Kluka and then Judge Peterson override that presumption?
Without any discussion, without any finding
That's
of a compelling
fine.
Need.
But if there is a problem with the order that the two Wisconsin judges have entered, that has to be redressed by the Wisconsin judiciary, not by the federal judiciary. Well, we can't say Judge Peterson made an error of Wisconsin law, so we're going to open these proceedings. We have to assume that these are legitimately confidential as a matter of Wisconsin law in an effort to keep investigatory documents secret. Everything has to follow from that. Otherwise, you're just asking us to disagree with a state court on a matter of state law.
I'm not asking you to do that, Your Honor, because this is really a unique situation. We're in federal court. These are federal judicial records now. They do flow from this John Doe proceeding. And we have an unusual circumstance where the judge has weighed in. He did not take the position in the federal litigation that these documents needed to be sealed. And in
fact, he was clearly just maintaining he didn't want to be an advocate for one thing or another. The order had been issued, as far as he was concerned, like the way I read it anyway, as far as he was concerned, spoke for itself, and he didn't need to file, you know, another 50-page brief explaining why he had done it.
But clearly it was an opportunity for the judge to say, as a matter of state law, I have concern and believe that the record should be sealed. But that said, after that, and this was unsealed after our opening brief, it's R-117, the judge issued an order authorizing the defendants to use any and all the material from the John Doe proceedings to defend themselves in this case in the district court and make it public and subject to the discretion of the federal district judge, which is exactly right. That's who has the power to make the decisions at this point. These are federal judicial records in federal court. The public has a right to scrutinize them to understand what's happening in this court today. We heard counsel for the plaintiffs say they're challenging the bad faith motivations of the defendants. The defendants put all this evidence in the record to say we weren't acting with bad faith, we weren't arguing, we weren't acting to target conservatives. We have no idea other than what's been publicly reported, and a lot has been publicly reported and unsealed by this court, which, by the way, we very much appreciate. But the eight documents remain, according to the defendants, crucial evidence that go to their defenses. And the public can't tell.
You're still not answering my basic question, which is why there should be disclosure of documents relevant to a pending criminal investigation. That's what the John Doe proceeding is. It remains pending, and these are documents that are important to it.
Well,
if the federal rule about grand jury secrecy is valid, how can a state rule not be valid?
Your Honor, we're not challenging the validity of the state rule. I'm taking the...
You are, indirectly. You're saying that any time some litigant who is forbidden by state law to disclose some document throws it over the transom of a federal court, poof, it becomes open to the public.
Not at all, Your Honor. Not at all. First of all, if they did it gratuitously, like in the City of Greenville case that this court decided last month and couldn't explain to the court why it was relevant, that would be one thing. The presumption wouldn't be triggered. That's what the court held in the City of Greenville.
And by the way, I mean, you could talk about the Syngenta case because the district court here said that these documents really didn't make any difference as far as he was concerned. He was, as I understood him, he was saying he was addressing it at a more general level as a question of law, and a detail here and a detail there didn't really matter to him.
Exactly, Your Honor, and that's why this case is completely different. Here, the district court did what the court in the Syngenta case, City of Greenville versus Syngenta, suggested would trigger the presumption because the judge ruled that the documents were irrelevant in this case. In Syngenta, the court pointed out that the district court there didn't do that. It ignored them. It had asked the parties, what's the relevance of these documents, and the party wouldn't explain it.
Now, let me ask you this question. Suppose this investigation, as I devoutly hope it will someday, shuts down, resolves, however it resolves. At that point, what is the law of Wisconsin on unsealing records of this sort? Could the defendants, for example, reveal things?
Well, my understanding is there's some argument and some case law in Wisconsin that suggests once they're sealed, you can't unseal them in the John Doe proceeding by going to the court and asking them to be unsealed. Now, I think that, again, raises under Wisconsin law. Under First Amendment law, we would argue, yes, the same presumption applies under the First Amendment. These are presumptively open proceedings. No specific findings were made. But that wouldn't address our issues here, Your Honor. The public needs to understand what the judge below did.
Did the judge below conduct an in-camera review of these documents to assure himself that the content required sealing?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. He ruled, and this goes to your question about the other documents and the procedure below. The district judge ruled that there was no presumption of access, picked up on the point Judge Easterbrook is making now, analogized to grand jury.
And I must say, I just don't understand this point about what the public needs to understand. Forget about the federal proceeding. Let's suppose an application were made to Judge Peterson to end the John Doe inquiry, and Judge Peterson then rules on that one way or the other and either closes it or continues it. You could make the very same argument that the public needs to know the basis on which Judge Peterson made his decision, and therefore the documents have to be disclosed. And that is, or would be, simply the end of grand jury secrecy. The public is very interested in who gets indicted and who doesn't get indicted and why they got indicted or why they didn't get indicted. It's the subject of banner headlines in newspapers all the time. And on that rationale, grand jury documents just couldn't be secret. What you're saying is that, although you acknowledge that rule, if somebody tries to litigate in Judicial System 2 about Judicial System 1's grand jury, then everything becomes public. That's what I don't get.
I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I'm not taking that blanket position. I'm saying under the facts here...
Are you arguing waiver? I mean, I guess there have been some documents that have been sealed that turned out were already in the public domain anyway, so there was no particular reason. Do you have waiver at all as a thought?
There's a waiver issue. The plaintiffs who brought the suit and who were opposing the unsealing of the documents, you mentioned the on-again, off-again position, they want everything to be unsealed except the things that they don't like. That's not how we run the federal court system. So they
actually, it is. If you think about the way in which a federal grand jury proceeds, the prosecutor is forbidden to disclose any documents, but a target of the investigation can disclose anything he wants, right? The target
Correct.
Of the investigation in federal practice has exactly the privilege that O'Keefe and the Club for Growth are claiming.
But that's not how this court has ruled in federal civil litigation, where litigants come in and
but
say...
But this is not... normal federal civil litigation. This is an effort to get review of a pending criminal investigation.
And the public needs
That's
to understand.
That's where we are. We can't ignore that.
The public needs to understand what this court decides on these immunity questions. We just heard counsel
yeah.
say.
So you are saying, just come back. Judge Peterson is asked to end this or not. You tell me you're not saying that he then has to disclose everything he considered.
He would have to apply.
But as long as a litigant tries to go to a second judicial system to deal with the pending criminal investigation, then everything has to be disclosed. And that makes no sense at all.
That's not what I'm saying, and my argument makes perfect sense, Your Honor. It's that one could go to Judge Peterson and say the First Amendment requires you to conduct a document-by-document review.
And maybe Judge Peterson would do that. I mean, that was the other point that
yes.
Judge Easterbrook was making. He would be entitled at that point perhaps to have a more finely tuned redaction where maybe some names and financial information continue to be redacted. But I mean, I have no idea. You know, but it certainly would be within his authority to do something like that.
Your Honor, but that would be far too late. This court has held over and over, and this court has probably the strongest jurisprudence of any circuit on the presumption of openness to protect the public's right to understand contemporaneously what's going on in federal court, in this court and in the district court. That would be, as you mentioned, who knows when these Wisconsin proceedings are going to be over? We don't know. And to be in the dark, to look at those briefs with all the redactions, and most of it is these eight documents, and to have it be everything comes out except what the I'm not taking sides here, but I want to know, are their arguments good? Was their evidence good? Are their arguments ridiculous? Was Judge Randa correct in finding this evidence relevant, irrelevant? There's ways to protect some of the interests. The First Amendment associational privilege or the privacy interests, as this court has held, you can't just say those words and end of story. They needed to make a specific showing as to each document and show specific harms that would result. Nobody did that at
right,
all.
So, but, and if this were, this is why we can't actually get away from the fact that this case is an invitation to butt into a state criminal proceeding. So as that kind of a case, we really do owe some respect to the way the state handles its criminal proceedings. It's not as though this were a police brutality case and somebody was bringing a lawsuit and you wanted to find out the information that had been collected about the way the police have been behaving lately or whatever was done. As you say, you know, our court insists that there be a good reason to keep things under seal. We unseal things all the time, even if they'd been sealed in the district court. But those are standalone cases. They're not this rather unusual procedure we have.
And well, let me just address two points on that. That yes, I completely agree. You must consider the state interests. I think the fact that we have the unusual situation where the trial judge has weighed in by first not taking a position, you're right, but also issuing the order in the state proceedings, allowing use and federal decisions to be made, is very different than the caricature that I'm arguing grand jury material, everything comes out. That's not what I'm arguing. But the Dow Jones case that we cite in our opening brief, where there it was a federal grand jury investigation, the D.C. Circuit said that where there was collateral litigation relating to the grand jury, information could come out. So this isn't some extraordinary rule I'm arguing that's so different from the federal rule. If there's a way to protect valid secrecy issues, names, perhaps personal identifying information, that can be done. But this court has never endorsed this. Let me just address these unnamed interveners. I've never argued a case in my life where I did not know who I was arguing against. This court has...
I'm going to have a word for them, too. Don't worry.
Oh, good. because, one, they filed a brief on the merits in this court. So they've injected themselves into the merits. They used 10 pages of their brief in our appeal to argue that the prosecutors acted improperly, and they attached an 88-page appendix of the history of Wisconsin campaign law. I'm sure you appreciated that over the weekend as well. And they're supposed to be just remaining silent.
It's better Same than what I had in the Wisconsin reapportionment case, which began with some book about Wisconsin that said, "A speck of cosmic dust." And I thought, do we really have to start at the Big Bang and move forward?
That's going way back.
That long reading saved me from the Chicago Bears game, so go ahead.
Well, the other problem with the unnamed interveners, again, is they're making these sweeping arguments about their associational rights and privacy rights, one paragraph on page 35. This court would never tolerate that in any case. And it shouldn't do it when we're talking about anonymous litigants who have come into federal court. This court has said over and over the public owns the courts and gets to know who comes in and litigates in them. And so the court should unseal those identities. And I'll sit down in a minute to save my time, but just to go to your point, Chief Judge, which on the five documents and other documents, the district court applied the wrong legal standard. We think that's a final order. That's what would be applied in these proceedings going forward as to whatever else remains sealed. So we think that the court has jurisdiction over those issues as well. I would like to reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Grossman?
Yes. Chief Judge Wood, and may it please the court, my name is Andrew Grossman. I represent the plaintiff's appellees in this case. If I could begin just by addressing a factual question.
So do you represent these unnamed interveners?
No, I do not, Your Honor. If I could begin by addressing a factual question that was raised during Mr. Boutros' argument as to whether or not documents could be unsealed during or following the closure of a John Doe proceeding, the answer is yes. The first phase of this investigation has been closed, and in recent months, at the behest of a media coalition, including, I believe, many of Mr. Boutros' clients, thousands of documents have, in fact, been unsealed and released.
By the state courts?
Yes, by the John Doe judge, in fact.
Our
involvement in this appeal concerns, Chief Judge Wood, your first category of eight documents. That's what we're concerned about. We asserted in the district court a First Amendment privilege regarding those documents, and on this appeal, we believe that the two arguments that the Media Coalition puts forward to reverse the district court judge's decision regarding those documents are waived.
Can I ask you a question? So the state judge gave you the green light to use whatever you needed in the federal litigation. Is that right?
That is not correct, Your Honor.
That's the defendants who were given the right to do that?
Yes, Your Honor.
But that wasn't, of course, once something was used, the federal court was still able to seal it as a federal matter. So to be able to use it isn't the same thing as to say it's disclosed.
We certainly believe that's correct, Your Honor, and that's something that I believe has been held in a number of cases. For example, the Dole v. SEIU case in the Ninth Circuit concerned confidential documents that were actually placed on the record in that case, and the court applied a First Amendment privilege to hold that they could be subject to a protective order, subsequently litigation, and then administrative proceedings.
Did the judge ever look at these documents, or did he just allow the parties to decide what was going to be sealed?
Your Honor, there were two phases of sealing in this matter before the district court.
By the judge, I mean Judge Randa. I'm sorry.
Right, of course, Your Honor. Initially, Judge Randa generally granted parties' motions to seal documents that were covered by the confidentiality order in the John Doe proceedings. Subsequently, after the Media Coalition intervened, the judge asked for responses to the Media Coalition's arguments regarding unsealing. And at that point, the judge conducted a more particularized review, including specifically specifically review of these particular eight documents. There were a number of documents that were addressed both by us and by the unnamed interveners, and in the end, the judge ruled definitively, as you noted, only on those particular eight documents without addressing the remainder of the evidentiary record.
He knows what these documents say, and so he was satisfied that they didn't say something awful.
Well, Your Honor,
let's go out and violate Wisconsin law, you know, or something like that.
Your Honor, that is certainly an accurate characterization of the contents of the record. We don't think that there, of course, is any evidence within those materials of any type of criminal conduct. At the same time, they do disclose, in effect, certain associational interests of the Club for Growth and Mr. O'Keefe and other of their associates. The media interveners on this appeal argue that the exacting scrutiny standard that typically applies to those types of documents and to their disclosures does not apply when those types of documents are placed in a record under seal in a district court. First of all, that argument was raised for the first time in the reply brief on appeal. Their opening brief, in fact, takes the opposite position, citing AFL-CIO, which is a case that we rely on extensively for that proposition. And second, they, of course, never raised that issue below. They also argue, again, belatedly.
I must say, having had the same bad weekend and a few other days as Chief Judge Wood, I'm troubled by the idea that both sides are saying, well, the other side waived one or another thing. They didn't write briefs that were long enough. You realize what kind of incentive it sends to lawyers if you persuade the court to say something like that?
Your Honor, we certainly did not use our full word allocation in this particular appeal, mainly for the reason that there were not many arguments on the other side that we felt that was necessary to meet. The media intervener's argument that our prima facie showing to invoke a First Amendment privilege is something that we believe is waived because it was only raised in a single sentence in their opening brief. And indeed, below, it was also addressed in a single sentence where they expressly took no position on the issue whatsoever. So in our view, at least with respect to these eight documents and the application of the plaintiff's First Amendment privilege to them, we don't think there's any dispute in this appeal for this court to rule on. We don't think the district court judge committed an abuse of his discretion by not passing on arguments that were never raised. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Bresnik.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Bresnik, how is this court supposed to deal with unnamed interveners?
Yes, good afternoon.
What if it was my husband's brother who was one of them?
Oh, well, Your Honor, we disclosed to the court who the parties are, but in terms of the public, we believe we should remain anonymous for the reasons addressed in the primary part of our brief, which is that this court has held in Lucas versus Turner that a glaring injustice and irreparable harm could be caused to the reputations of targets of ongoing grand jury criminal investigations if the fact that they are currently being investigated were to be made public. And that's even more so if no indictment were even to ensue. And that's, Your Honor, the primary reason why we put in the 10 pages or whatever it was about the state of Wisconsin law, which we believe show and demonstrate that regardless of whatever the prosecutors are alleging in this case, it cannot be a crime under Wisconsin law because Wisconsin law does not make what they claim to be a crime, in fact, a crime. So Your Honor and this court can consider that, we believe, in determining the privacy interests of the unnamed interveners.
It shouldn't really matter, though. I mean, if it's a John Doe proceeding about drug dealing in Milwaukee or if it's a John Doe proceeding about campaign finance or if it's a John Doe proceeding about, Medicaid fraud, people who are investigated might get swept in who are absolutely innocent of any type of wrongdoing, and they have the same kind of interest that you're talking about in not having their names paraded through the media.
I wholly agree, Your Honor. That's absolutely right. I was just making it clear for the court that we believe that no crime actually could have been committed under Wisconsin law, and that's another fact for Your Honor
and this court
to consider.
I'm thinking that's pretty irrelevant, actually, since you're making a structural point.
Nevertheless, Your Honor, this court has been very clear through the line of cases from Crumble to Corbett to Lucas versus Turner to Socialist Workers Party that John Doe proceedings are analogous in all material respects to grand jury proceedings and that the reputations of those who are being investigated should be protected. This court held in Corbett that the First Amendment right of access does not apply to PSRs, which the court equated with grand jury.
Not apply to what, sir?
Pardon me?
Did not apply to what?
To PSRs, pre-sentence reports, Your Honor.
If you would use real words than initialisms, it would help.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, PSR was used in the opinion, which is why I was using it. But yes, pre-sentence reports. And in that case, Corbett equated pre-sentence reports with grand jury proceedings. The Corbett court further held that the Douglas Oil standard should apply to any party who was requesting the disclosure of grand jury documents. I think it's rather remarkable still that I still haven't heard from the coalition that they believe that Douglas Oil applies and that they are required to meet that burden, but nevertheless, that's what Corbett holds quite clearly. Corbett was also interesting for another point, Your Honor. Actually, I think it's a rather interesting on a number of points, but Corbett held that the press has a general interest in pretty much every criminal proceeding, even in those involving public officials, but that's rarely sufficient enough to overcome the burden that they must meet in Douglas Oil, which is, again, what we have here. So I think Your Honor and this Court can consider that. In addition, Your Honor, Corbett holds that if you were to unseal grand jury records, that the Court should consider not just the effect in this particular case, but on all future cases. That was first held in Douglas Oil, and Corbett reiterated that. So, the press, the coalition might argue, well, this case is sui generis, and that might in fact be the case, but I doubt a member of the public or somebody who might be a witness in a future John Doe investigation who's considering coming forward with evidence or information material to that investigation would consider the fact that this case might be one of a kind and might be fearful that his or her testimony or information might be made public at some future point. I think that's a very serious fact that the Court should consider. Your Honor, unless you have any questions, I'll sit down.
Evidently not. Thank you very much. Mr. Russell.
Joseph Russell for John Doe Special Prosecutor Fran Schmitz. First, I want to dispel any notion that a Wisconsin John Doe proceeding is anything like Charles I's Star Chamber. In this case, there are five district attorneys of both political parties that petitioned for secrecy.
The Court of Star Chamber, by the way, had full adversarial proceedings. We don't need to discuss how the Star Chamber was operated, but I think it's got a bad rap.
Regardless of the press's attempt to pry open the John Doe proceedings, there are still valid reasons for maintaining secrecy, and those reasons were outlined in the district attorney's petitions to the John Doe judge when they petitioned for the commencement of those proceedings.
So let me ask you, though, it was my understanding that Mr. Schmitz has a few more that he wants to add to the list of these eight, right? And so I want to know why the right way to approach that isn't to ask the district court judge, who apparently is reviewing all sorts of other things anyway, to seal them. They're sealed at the moment, right? Or they must be. What's the point?
They're under seal, and the extra documents that Mr. Schmitz is asking to be sealed are just duplicates of what are in the eight primary documents,
he's just identified duplicates of the eight that we're talking about?
Correct.
I mean, surely the district court will realize that they're duplicates, and so there's not much point in sealing the first group if you're not going to seal the duplicates.
Correct. The documents at issue are the core affidavits and the exhibits supporting those affidavits that the district attorneys submitted to the John Doe judge, and which the John Doe judge reviewed in order to find the reasonable belief that crime's been committed. And in reviewing those documents, she also determined that secrecy orders were appropriate for each of these five proceedings for the three primary reasons that unwarranted publicity could color witness testimony of those that are subpoenaed to testify in front of the John Doe judge. It could lead to the loss or destruction of evidence that would otherwise be subpoenaed by the John Doe
proceedings. Federal district judge ever entered such an order about a federal grand jury investigation prohibiting the targets and witnesses to the grand jury investigation from stating that they had been asked to provide evidence and what their response to that request was?
I think that information would remain under seal under federal rule.
No,
it is not.
Can talk all
the target. The target of a federal grand jury investigation and any witness not only can reveal that he's been called before the grand jury, But as soon as he steps outside the grand jury room, can tell the nearest reporter every word he said, if he can remember it. Can't get a transcript, but he can spill the beans.
Sometimes that's a foolish move, but
right.
It's...
But it's lawful. And it does seem to me that an order saying you can't talk about your own involvement is a classic gag order and probably unconstitutional per se. But as far as I can gather, that's not at issue in this appeal, is it?
Well, the judge, John Doe judge, issued the order even before the appointment of
I understand
client.
That. And it just seemed to be screamingly unconstitutional. It's the kind of thing the Supreme Court has reversed in one-paragraph summary opinions. But as far as I can tell, and I just want to be sure that I'm right, the fight we are currently having has to do with documents that are in the record rather than with the prohibition on making public statements.
Correct. The secrecy order does govern witness statements. I mean, the subpoena that was issued on
the broader order, but the four affidavits and the four related documents, plus their duplicates, if you will, are actual documents. They're not John Smith wanting to talk about John Smith's participation in this somehow.
They are affidavits of special investigators that are showing their reasonable belief that a crime has been committed, a campaign finance crime, and there are the summaries of those documents and exhibits that are attached in support of the affidavit.
Okay.
Those are the documents on which the district attorneys petitioned the John Does in each of these five counties, and those are the documents that the district court or the John Doe judge reviewed in commencing the proceedings. And she determined, the John Doe judge, as many John Doe judges have before her, that the John Doe proceeding should remain secret, and these documents should be sealed, because otherwise the integrity of the John Doe proceeding could be undermined. Much like
it does happen, though, doesn't it, that witnesses might be called before the John Doe judge to testify.
Correct.
Not these documents, but in the course of such proceedings, that happens.
Correct. Witnesses can be subpoenaed, and the judge can hear testimony from those
witnesses.
But we
aren't dealing today with whatever happens to them.
No, we are, because there haven't, we're here because of the issuance of a subpoena, and whether there was probable cause to issue that subpoena.
Right.
There's no evidence in the record right now about witness testimony in front of the John Doe judge. Because, as was pointed out already, the John Doe judge halted the investigation in January of this year. He didn't close it, so it remains an open criminal proceeding, pending rulings by this court, the state courts, where similar filings have been made under seal. The special prosecutor has made an attempt to comply with the orders as the special prosecutor of the proceedings. He has an interest in maintaining the integrity of the proceedings and protecting those that are identified in the materials that against whom charges may never be brought. Those are similar reasons. It's pointed out in Supreme Court case Douglas Oil, and similar reasons have been pointed out by the federal court or the Seventh Circuit. U.S. v. Crumble, the Seventh Circuit case, has equated the same reasons for maintaining secrecy in a John Doe proceeding as same. That's the same valid reasons for maintaining secrecy in a grand jury proceeding, and that's why Federal Rule or Criminal Rule 6 is there, to protect matters occurring before a grand jury. Now, there has been a lot of information that has been made public, including Plaintiff O'Keefe's discussion with Wall Street Journal in November of 2013, that there was an ongoing criminal prosecution and that he was a subpoenaed party. The federal lawsuit they filed further released information. But as the Wisconsin Court of Appeals found on January 30th, 2014, these proceedings are legitimate, the special prosecutor's appointment's legitimate, and the secrecy orders are legitimate. And that court in particular found that the evidence, the detailed evidence, including the identities of people involved in the proceedings, should remain under seal. The district court or special prosecutor has been trying to comply with that order. In defending this lawsuit, he requested, petitioned the John Doe judge for a qualified use order that he could use the material gathered in the John Doe to defend himself from these personal damages claims. But that wasn't an open order to unseal everything. Everything that the defendants have used has been filed under seal. And once the district court weighed in and said, I need to make a document-by-document a review of what's been sealed, then the special prosecutor deferred to the discretionary judgment of the district court. And we've worked with the plaintiffs and non-named interveners in identifying these core documents that underlie the proceedings. And until those proceedings are closed, it would be premature to disclose them and undermine the integrity of the proceedings, as well as subject those that are not charged with any crimes to, in the words of Douglas Oil, public ridicule. If this court does determine that some of these documents should be unsealed, I would suggest that the special prosecutor work with the John Doe judge, who has supported the special prosecutor's position on unsealing since this lawsuit was filed, and that the special prosecutor would be in the best position to redact the information that would protect the integrity of the proceedings as well as others against whom charges are not brought. If there are no further questions, I have nothing else to add.
All right. Apparently not, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think you had a little bit of time left, Mr. Boutrous, so it's yours to use.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me begin with Mr. Schmitz's arguments, because, first of all, with respect to the ongoing proceedings in the district court applied and is applying the wrong standard. It's applying the willing speaker doctrine, which means the public is at the mercy of whatever the parties want to release. That's not the rule this court applies. This court creates a presumption of established a presumption of access, and they need to meet it with compelling evidence as to each document during that review. So we hope the court, if it does not rule to hear that everything must be unsealed, makes clear that the proper legal standard is the one this court has applied over and over again. With respect to the arguments below and in this court, we're not really arguing waiver with respect to Mr. Schmitz, but the fact that the special prosecutor did not take the position below that the integrity of the investigation needed to be protected by keeping this information under seal, it at the very least shows there's not a compelling basis for doing that. And, in fact, this court has never tolerated this kind of generic argument that, well, it would be better not to release the information. In the Foster case...
I can't remember a case like this one, though, where we were being asked to release to the public things that were, let's say, prosecutorial materials, grand juries in most states, and in Wisconsin, apparently John Doe, too.
Prosecutorial,
very unusual setting.
As the court knows, I think that the John Doe proceedings are very much much more akin to preliminary hearings, which are open to the public. So the public has a right to hear the evidence prosecutors want to use to prosecute people. That evidence is...
Except that the state judiciary doesn't agree with you about that.
But we're in the federal court.
Look, counsel, that's what this secrecy order is. We have to assume that the Wisconsin judiciary knows Wisconsin law. That's why we had this earlier discussion. You can't ask us to assume that Wisconsin's judges don't know whether this can be kept secret as a matter of Wisconsin's law. They do, and they so provided for secrecy.
I'm not asking you to do that, Your Honor. I'm asking you to apply the principles that this court has applied over and over again.
You're asking us to ignore Wisconsin law.
No, I'm not, Your Honor. Much of the record has...
To override Wisconsin law on a question about what do we do with documents gathered in a pending criminal investigation.
That are filed in federal court as part of a federal lawsuit where the parties came in and...
That's why I said what you're saying is every time a state grand jury investigation comes under question in federal court, you're arguing that all the rules flip. And you denied that that's what you're arguing, but I can't see any way in which your argument differs from the one that I attributed to
it. It differs in this way, Your Honor. I'm arguing that the interests of the state in comity with the state is a factor to be considered in applying the federal rules, the federal common law rule and the federal First Amendment rule. in determining whether there's a compelling basis for keeping information under seal. Here, there's been no specific showing with respect to those documents. Much of it is public. The public knows a lot about the case, but not the crucial evidence that the prosecutors say support their case. So I'm very sensitive to the concerns Judge Easterbrook has been making on this. I'm not making that sweeping argument. But for the public to understand this case, a federal judge halted a state prosecution. That's extraordinary. We need to know what he was thinking and what he was relying on and what he didn't rely on.
Wait. When you say we need to know what he was thinking, presumably now we're going to have public disclosure of what the judge said to his law clerks and what his law clerks said to him. Because if we don't have that, we don't know what he was thinking.
Well, we can infer what he was thinking, Your Honor, based on what he relied on and didn't rely on.
He wrote an opinion. That tells us what he was thinking. And beyond that, we do not go.
Well, we do go there, Your Honor, because you have said that the record should be open so public decisions can be judged by the record that supported them. And here, Judge Randa said that certain information was irrelevant. We need to know if it was irrelevant or if it was relevant to understand what he was thinking. And we know we can't take a deposition of him, but we get to look at the record. The public gets to see the record of this court and the district court, so the court should unseal the record. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to all counsel. We will take this case under advisement, and the court will be adjourned.